I think this is the right reason for computers to be invented, so we can hear Srimad Bhagavatam and just open up the computer and hear Srimad Bhagavatam. It's a good use for computers. Yukta Vairagya. In the evening class, we've been discussing lately chapter 12, all going all the way back to chapter 6. And anyway, so the childhood pastimes of Krishna. And in chapter 12, it has several main sections or large sections. The cowherd boys go into the forest with the calves and they just play, and their descriptions of playing. And then Agasura and the slaying of Agasura, and then Brahma's witnessing that pastime and becoming curious, what's the extent of Krishna's mystic powers, and then the stealing of the calves and cowherd boys, seeing what Krishna would do, and then Krishna exhibiting what he exhibited to before Brahma's eyes. And then the next, what happened during that 1 year that Brahma was gone and the cowherd boys, Krishna manifested himself as the cowherd boys and calves. So that's 13, and then 14 is his prayers. So that's kind of the storyline. And we're kind of stuck on one verse because it's so important. It appears again and again and again and again in commentaries. Not exactly stuck. We're celebrating this one nice verse. So, Canto 10, Chapter 12, verses 7 through 10 are describing the playing, what the boys do together. And then 11 describes this very special verse, Krita Punya Punja, the very special position of the cowherd boys. And we'll hear it a few times this evening, that Krita Punya Punja verse. I'm using that phrase because Prabhupada referred to that phrase over and over. My experience of how Prabhupada would refer to verses is something similar to what our acharyas would do. They would just say a few phrases, commonly at the beginning, and by saying it again and saying it again, the message is carried of the whole section just by saying those few words or phrases, kind of like a sutra. And the way the Prabhupada would use it is, how fortunate are the cowherd boys? How many pious activities might they have performed to come to that position that they can play with Krishna? There's other parts to the verse which we'll hear this evening. So that's the background, the context. And now we'll begin. There's a very short section from Jiva Goswami's Krama Sandarbha commentary. Krama Sandarbha is one of the three commentaries that Jiva Goswami wrote on Srimad Bhagavatam. And it's largely a verse by verse from the beginning to the end of Srimad Bhagavatam. That's what Krama Sandarbha is. It's not every single verse, like Prabhupada didn't make commentary for every single verse, but most of the verses. So here's his reference to verses 7 through 10 of chapter 12. Kisha Balan means baby monkeys, because in the verse it says the boys would pull on the tails of the baby monkeys. It's one of the playthings. Shrava means waterfalls. They laughed at their reflections in the water while making funny faces. Okay? So then this is Krishna Sandarbha, which is from another set of Jiva Goswami's commentary. This is topic by topic. And this is describing, well, the flow goes like this. Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. So you're familiar with those terms, right? Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. So this is in the Sambandha section. It's the final of the Sambandha section. After describing truths about Krishna, general Krishna tattva points, it's Paramatma Sandarbha, Bhagavat Sandarbha, Krishna Sandarbha. And it's very logical to go in that sequence. So this is Krishna Sandarbha, Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna's the source of everything. The source of all the avatars, the source of everything. He's it. That's the absolute truth. Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. That's this Sandarbha. And during this, in this section that we're reading from, he's describing the nature of Krishna in Vrindavan. Because Swayam Bhagavan appears in Vrindavan. So he writes, the people of Raja were not aware of time because of their great bliss. And he quotes Brahma Samhita, text 56. Vrajati na hi yatrapi samaya, or time does not pass there. And despite the fact that time does not pass there, they have a sense that time is passing because they're overwhelmed with bliss. So that's his comment. Overcome with bliss on Krishna's arrival, they always think, he has come today. This is now just a little stepping back for a moment. He's going to start speaking about the manifest pastimes and the unmanifest pastimes. Prakat, when Krishna performs his pastimes once in a day of Brahma. That's the Prakat pastimes. And it's in this world, and so there's this seeming sense of passage of time, although the pastimes are eternal. That's the Prakat Leela. Then he's going to say that the unmanifest pastimes carry some of the bhava or some of the semblance of the activities in prakat, in the aprakat. But it's not precisely the same. I'll give some examples. This is it's an important topic for Vaishnavas to understand. So we're going to go here. This is Krishna Loka, and then this is Boma Vrindavan. So in Krishna Loka, there's Nitya Leela, eternal pastimes. And in Boma Vrindavan, there's Nitya Leela, and there's occasional pastimes, or Naimittika Leela, occasional pastimes. That's how Bhaktivinoda Thakur calls it, occasional. And occasional pastimes include Krishna's birth. In Krishna Loka, there's no birth pastime. Mother Jasoda feels Krishna is my son. There's no birth pastime. There's no demons in Krishna Loka. Here there's demons. They come and they go. That means time, as we know it. But so the Prajbhasis don't feel the passage of time because they're so much absorbed in bliss. Then another that's mentioned by Bhaktivinoda Thakur as Krishna is leaving Vrindavan. There's no such pastime in Krishna Loka. he's eternally in Vrindavan. But there's a, so at be, the, he's going to make the point, Jiva Goswami is going to make the point, because of the Boma Lila, or the Prakat pastimes, there's some semblance of that that's carried over into the unmanifest or Aprakat pastimes. You'll catch it as we go along. But then, you know, the standard is from Brahma Samhita, time is conspicuous by its absence. Time as we know it. Or time does not pass there, because one of the things that time does is destroys things. So in Krishna Loka, nothing is destroyed. There's no passage of time. But because of bliss, in the Boma Lila, they have the sense of passage of time. He has come today, and they're in bliss. Okay. So here comes this Prakat and Aprakat topic. Jiva Goswami writes, just as one enters the mood of the Prakat pastimes in the Aprakat pastimes, and he adds another word, Aprakat Swarasiki. So during, this is discussed in Brahma Samhita. So it's in Jiva Goswami's commentary, translated into English eventually by Bhaktisiddhanta. I'm just going to describe the Swarasiki term. Swarasiki, Jiva Goswami writes, there are presently today some Vaishnavas that have that this spiritual capacity that they can enter into Krishna's Aprakat pastimes, like the Goswamis. And that's called Swarasiki. And he makes this comparison. He makes the comparison between a lake and a river. And mantra upasana is the lake. It's a particular pastime captured in a verse, a mantra, or a sloka, or something. And by profound meditation in that, it's like a snapshot, like, you know, one of your nice paintings of Radha Krishna pastimes, and if there was a mantra describing that Radha Krishna pastimes, that's mantra upasana. And Jiva Goswami explains that the object is Krishna, he's the object of the mantra, and by meditation upon that mantra, or by worship of that mantra, one can see the pastime of Krishna. Mantra upasana. That's an advanced stage. And more advanced is like you enter into a lake that is connected to a river, or lakes are sometimes formed by rivers, and you enter into the river, and then the pastimes are moving, and you can enter into the moving pastimes of Krishna. Not just see a pastime, but you enter, you participate in Krishna's pastimes through sound. That's called Swarasaki. So now just, I'll go back to his language. It's packed up. So I just unpacked it for you. Sometimes, when those who are participating in Krishna's Prakat pastimes, or as we are hearing about Krishna's Prakat pastimes, one, a very advanced devotee, may be able to experience even pastimes that are not described in Srimad Bhagavatam, like the Goswamis. Just as one enters the mood of the Prakat pastimes in the Aprakat Swarasaki pastimes, so one enters the mood of individual manifestations in the Mantra Upasana Mayi pastimes. Then he uses the metaphor. The condition of the Ganga is present in a series of lakes. the series of lakes, that's the mantras in Mantrupasana. And through those Mantrupasana, one can enter into the pastimes that are moving. In both cases, they are regarded equally, that is, so he gives an example. The killer of Kamsa plays in Braja in association with the gopis. O Govinda, Lord of the gopis, killer of Kamsa and Agha. He's drawn from Padma Purana. He's just mentioning the pastime and then another pastime over there. Those are two lakes. Three, killer of Kamsa and Agha, and Lord of the gopis, O Govinda. So, as in the Sva-rasika, so also in the Mantrupasana pastimes, one meditates on the son of Nanda. Then he quotes Gotamiya Tantra. Quote, the devata of the mantra is the son of Nanda, auspicious for the whole world. Since special moods, we'll get over the technical pretty quick. It's at the beginning, so. Since special moods of the prakat pastimes enter into the aprakat pastimes, special moods such as his appearance and disappearance pastimes, they're also described in the aprakat experience, but not as many separate events, but just one. So there's the lakes, and then there's the flowing river. Next. Even though they have awareness, they is the residents of Braja, the cowherd men, cowherd ladies, and Krishna's cowherd boyfriends. Even though they have awareness of previously experiencing these events in time without beginning, that's his prakat pastimes, Krishna repeatedly appears in the world in his prakat lila in order to reinforce and refresh that mood. So it gets carried over into the aprakat. There's the bhava of Mother Jasoda, Krishna's my child. There's no pastime. But it's the bhava is there, the mood. And then the same Mother Jasoda takes part in Krishna's prakat pastimes, and she gives birth to Krishna. That's the prakat pastime, the occasional pastime. So what he's saying, Jiva Goswami is saying, they exist, there's a semblance of that in Krishna Loka, so Krishna Loka, in the Bhoma Lila activities, that are the occasional ones. And the occasional ones happen occasionally, so the mood of Mother Jasoda can, yes, Krishna's my son. Or, oh, Krishna's leaving Braja to go to Mathura. The pastime is reenacted to refresh the bhav, stimulate it. Okay. Next. It has already been shown that Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. That's the whole Krishna Sandarbha. So he's just like stating it again. I'm not going to go through the whole argument. Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. And then he goes in breaking it down. He manifests most excellently in Gokula. There he shows great powers. For example, he showed himself as the Lord of millions of universes before Brahma, in the Brahma Vimohan Lila. Millions. Countless. The single form of rasa, composed of existence, knowledge, and unlimited bliss. His form of Swayam Bhagavan Krishna contains within it this great power, the millions of universes, and etc., the vision shown to Brahma. So, great powers. He's full of compassion in Braja, giving the position of a mother to Putana. And he is full of sweetness. And then there's a lot of examples of his sweetness. So he starts with the queens of Dwarka when they're in Kurukshetra and they meet the residents of Vrindavan, and they also meet Draupadi, and you know, there's all kinds of things, nice things that happen there. The queens of Dwarka are appreciating the residents of Vrindavan in this verse. We desire the same contact with Supreme Lord's feet that the young women of Braja, the cowherd boys, and even the aborigine Palinda women desire. That is, the touch of the dust he leaves on the plants and grass as he tends his cows. Sweetness. Jiva Goswami goes on, this statement is suitable because it indicates the special nature of the sweetness revealed in the gopis, endowed with the highest prema, endowed with the good fortune to touch his feet. Thus, it is also said, quote, same chapter 83 of Canto 10, dear Krishna, what woman in all the three worlds wouldn't deviate from religious behavior when bewildered by the sweet, drawn-out melody of your flute? Your beauty makes all three worlds auspicious. Even the cows, birds, trees, and deer manifest the ecstatic symptom of bodily hair standing on end when they see your beautiful form. Again, that's the queens in Dwarka, speaking about Krishna's Braja pastimes. He performs such intimate pastimes. This is praised. Again, the sweetness and intimacy of his pastimes. Canto 10, chapter 8. This is now glorifying Mother Jasoda. Great devotees sing of the activities of Krishna in his childhood, which Vasudeva and Devaki could not experience, and which even today destroy the sins of all people. His paraphernalia is the greatest. From this chapter, chapter 11 coming up, we haven't gotten there yet. Oh, King Parikshit, Shukadeva Goswami speaks, when Rama and Krishna saw Vrindavan, actually, that was the previous chapter, sorry. When Rama, that's Balaram, and Krishna saw Vrindavan, Govardhan, and the banks of the river Jamuna, they both enjoyed great pleasure. So his paraphernalia is the greatest. His associates are the greatest. Chapter 14, Brahma's Prayers. How greatly fortunate are Nanda Maharaj, the cowherd man, and all the other inhabitants of Brajabhumi. There is no limit to their good fortune because Krishna gave them prema, which is the highest bliss, eternal and complete. And now it's our verse for these several days, 10, 12, 11. Quote, in this way, with an abundance of splendor caused by Krishna, they played with him, who was pure consciousness known as Brahman for the Gyanis, who was the Supreme Lord for the devotees with Dasya Bhav, and who was an ordinary human child for those covered by material illusion. Going back to chapter 8, what pious acts did Nanda perform to cause such affection? And what pious acts did most fortunate Yashoda perform so that the Lord drank from her breast? Then another quote from Uddhava, chapter 47, 10th canto. Among all persons on earth, these cowherd women alone have attained perfect bodies, for they have achieved Mahabhava for Govinda, the source of all forms of the Lord. Their pure love is desired by those who fear material existence, by great sages, and by ourselves as well. For one who has tasted the narrations of the infinite Lord, what is the use of taking birth in a high-class brahmana, or even as a high-class brahmana, or even as Brahma himself? And also, what worship must the gopis have performed? With their eyes, they always drink the nectar of Krishna's form, which is the essence of loveliness and is not to be equaled or surpassed. That loveliness is the abode, only abode of beauty, fame, and opulence. It is self-perfect, ever-fresh, and extremely rare. And one more section. Again, Jiva Goswami. He likes this Krita Punya Punja verse. This is from another Sandarbha, the last one. So I mentioned there's Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. The Abhideya is Bhakti Sandarbha. It's the largest. And the concluding one is the smallest. It's Priti Sandarbha. But it's really nice. So this is from Priti Sandarbha, speaking about the love of the residents of Braja and their unique position as having attained the highest stage. And the language that's used, there's verses that are going to be referred to where it speaks of liberation, apavarga. Pavarga is this world and apavarga is the realm of liberation. And he's going to work the topic to the point where liberation means Krishna Prema. And Krishna Prema in its highest form is in Braja. But he's going to take this word that's used by others besides Jiva Goswami and even other places than the Bhagavatam, but the Bhagavatam refers to this word, apavarga, as ultimate liberation or attaining Krishna's association. So that's the topic. Here's how it begins. Samipya. There's six kinds of liberations, right? And one of them is Sayuja, the one that most people think about when they think of liberation, is becoming one, merging with the effulgence of Brahman. Sayuja. And then there's five others. And of the five others, Jiva Goswami writes, one of them is superlative. And that superlative one is Samipya. Samipya is the liberation that means equal association with the Lord. There's Sharsti having equal opulence, Sarup, Sriyam, Mukti, having a form like the Lord, and so forth. But having his association, intimate association, samipya. So he writes, samipya is greater than salokya and the others. It is greater since it requires external appearance of the Lord. This has been shown. In this way, liberation has been shown. In Vishnu Damotara, Vajra asks, now Vishnu Damotra is not a well-known text, but our acharyas sometimes refer to it. And, it's about Vishnu, so it's Vaishnavas are interested in what it has to say. The person that's asking the question is Vajra. And we're going to hear shortly. Vajra is the son of Aniruddha. Aniruddha is the son of Pradyumna. Pradyumna is the son of Krishna. So Krishna is the great-grandfather of Vajra. And Vajra is asking Markandeya Rishi, about liberation. And it goes like this. Here's his question. If the number of jivas is constant in all kalpas, liberation is not proper at all. O knower of Dharma, I ask the cause. If kalpa after kalpa, the jivas are one by one, liberated, the universe would become empty, since there is no beginning to time. You follow? Bhagavad Gita says, and so he's not taking a different position, Bhagavad Gita, jivas are not created or destroyed. Not at any point in time do they come into being or go out of being. There's a finite number of jivas. So if the finite number of jivas is there, and in each day of Brahma, there's liberation of some living entities and some liberation of some living entities, then it doesn't work, because then the universe is going to become empty. I have a doubt. Could you please explain? So that's the question. Very interesting answer. Markandeya answers, when a jiva is liberated, the Lord, possessing inconceivable Shakti, fills the universe by releasing another jiva. It's not like they come into being. We'll hear the explanation. Those who go to Brahmaloka are liberated with Brahma. Others are so-called created in the next life of Brahma from Vishnu Dharmotra. And Jiva Goswami explains. Listen carefully. Sometimes some jivas in a kalpa, so kalpa means a day of Brahma, sometimes some jivas in a kalpa are in a deep sleep state. The deep sleep state is susupti. So before Brahma comes from the body of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, all the living entities are in susupti. And then there's the glance of Mahavishnu and so forth. So his statement is, Jiva Goswami's statement is, that during a particular day of Brahma, some living entities are still in that susupti state. They're not given bodies, they're not given upadis and designations and all kinds of things. They're still in the susupti state. So sometimes some jivas in a kalpa are in a deep sleep state, since their karmas have not been awakened. Quote, creation refers to entering universe through creation of upadis for the infinite number of jivas who have entered infinite universes, although they were previously merged in Prakriti. If there was a first creation, but there isn't, it's cyclical. How many, you know, when was the first creation? There's no such thing. If there was a first creation, there would be the fault of getting reactions for acts not committed. You with me? This is the fall of the jiva topic, by the way. You know that one? Why living entities, they were in such a nice place and they left a nice place and came here. Why'd they do that? As if it's an event in time. Anyway, I don't want to get into a discussion on the fall of the jiva, but it's interesting. He writes, if there was a first creation, there would be the fault of getting reactions for acts not committed. Parentheses, this part applies to the argument, and getting unreasonable destruction of reactions for acts committed. priti, or love for the Lord, is described as greater than these types of liberation. Even if these liberations cannot exist without priti, some persons have the goal of these liberations with destruction of personal suffering and not the goal of the Lord. Such persons are inferior. Thus, it is said, kaivalyaika prayojanam. This is a quote, a phrase from 12th Canto Bhagavatam, chapter 13. The goal of Bhagavatam is the Lord. The meaning concludes in Bhagavatam. Similarly, the meaning of the previous three lines are shown to indicate Bhagavan according to the Tattva and Bhagavat Sandarbhas, since it was established there that the complete manifestation of existing beings is Bhagavan. Now this is Krishna Sandarbha, he's the topmost feature of Bhagavan. All Bhagavans are his expansions or his. Previous to that verse describing the nature of the Bhagavatam, that's 12:13-12, it was shown that priti for the Lord is the principal element. Here's the prior verse from that chapter, 12:13-11. From the beginning to end, the Srimad Bhagavatam is full of the nectar of the Lord's pastimes, which give bliss to devotees endowed with a sense of renunciation. And then going back to the Krita Punya Punja verse. The works, that's the Bhagavatams, sweet narrations of pastimes of the Lord give bliss to the devotees, Sura, who are Atmarama, Sat. Sat refers to Atmaramas in this 10, 12, 11. So the 10, 12, 11, I'll just say it again slowly. The cowherd boys are said to be topmost. They're playing with the Lord who the impersonal jnanis perceive as impersonal Brahman, who those who are serving in the mood of Dasya Bhav, they serve the Supreme Lord, they see him as master. And the materialists, they see him as an ordinary person. But they're playing with him. So speaking then of the jnanis, the phrase in that verse is, etam satam brahma sukhanu bhutya. Etam satam. Satam. Those are the jnanis. Etam satam brahma sukha. The happiness of Brahman. The jnanis experience the happiness of Brahman. They don't see that they're not playing with Krishna. The cowherd boys have gone way beyond. So this, the point that's being made here is the pastimes of Krishna, they're none different than Krishna. That the narration of the pastimes, the Bhagavatam is none different than Krishna. And, those sweet narrations are attractive to those who are already Atmaramas. Like Shukadeva Goswami was an Atmarama. He wasn't attracted to anything material. He was satisfied within. Yet he was attracted to hearing the pastime of Krishna that his father narrated from Srimad Bhagavatam. So as Atmaramas are attracted, the impersonalist can become attracted because the pastimes of Krishna are so sweet. The emphasis is now going to the supremacy of Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna and Braja, the pastimes are so sweet that even the impersonalists are attracted. The Satam folks, those that don't have any material attraction, the Atmarama folks. It gives bliss the narration gives bliss. And for the residents of Braja, they're in such bliss. Although the events are eternal, they're experiencing meeting and separation. They're experiencing rasa by Krishna's stimulating their, in reciprocation with their love for him. Then he quotes Canto 2, Chapter 1, Sukadev saying, "Though I was fixed in Brahman and beyond the gunas, my mind became attracted by the pastimes of the Lord. I thus learned about his pastimes." So now he goes on, Jiva goes on, commentary. I'm going to summarize this at the end. It's a little thick, but it's also very sweet. And he's making some important points. Thus, Kaivalya should be explained in terms of these verses. Now, Kaivalya is a term that Mayavadis like a lot. Kevala Advaita, that's the Shankara's teaching, is known by that language. Kevala Advaita, absolute monism. So Kaivalya is the absolutism or absolute monism. Jiva Goswami is arguing, no. Kaivalya means the love of the residents of Vrindavan. So Kevala Bhakti, not Kevala Dvaita. Absolute Bhakti, nothing but. Thus, Kaivalya should be explained in terms of these verses. If the word Kaivalya is explained as pure, then this indicates Preeti, which is most pure. The meaning is Preeti alone. Previously, the word Shuddha was explained in Bhakti Sandarbha to mean pure Bhakti, Shuddha Bhakti, Keval Bhakti, Prema Bhakti, Preeti Bhakti. He's a lawyer making a case with reference to scripture, but if he's tasting as he's going along. This was stated in explaining the faults of other things. Dharma projita kaitavotra parama. That's the, in the introduction verses of the Bhagavatam 112. This Srimad Bhagavatam, Dharma Projita Kaitava, Parama. This Bhagavatam will only explain Parama Dharma, Paro Dharma, the superlative stage. And that superlative stage is love, not monism. The commentary says the prefix pra, that's projita, the prefix pra indicates rejection of even the desire for liberation, which was stated earlier. In Bhagavatam, which presents Bhagavad Dharma, the desire for liberation is considered cheating. If the word Kaivalya is taken to mean Bhagavan or his nature, then his nature is Preeti alone. Here's a verse taken from Canto 3, Chapter 15. This is the Kumaras. They're at the gates of Vaikuntha. Lord Narayan has come and pacified them. And they say, "Let us remain in hellish existence because of sinful actions, if our minds can achieve prema at your lotus feet like bees." So that's Jiva's translation. Here's the BBT translation. "O Lord, we pray that you let us be born in any hellish condition of life, just as long as our hearts and minds are always engaged in the service of your lotus feet. Our words are made beautiful by speaking of your activities, just as tulsi leaves are beautified when offered unto your lotus feet, and as long as our ears are always filled with the chanting of your transcendental qualities. So he's making scriptural references to support his case. In his case is, the residents of Vrindavan have the highest kind of love. Thus, priti is the conclusion, since everything ends in its cultivation. Priti to the Lord, which is superior to the kaivalya of liberation, is the goal. Actually, however, the word kaivalya is mainly used to indicate pure bhakti, as was discussed before. This is illustrated with the following prose. Yatha varna vidhanam apavargas chapi bhavati. There's this word apavarga again. Liberation. All these destinations are prescribed for the self according to the quality of the performer's actions, as indicated in the Vedas. That's this, you know, this Kritta Punya Punja verse. The Jnani is this, the Dasya Bhakta is that, those covered by Maya, that's something else, and the cowherd boys, they're playing with him. Or Mother Jasoda and Nanda, they're just their beloved son and they don't care to know anything else. Like, so the exaltedness of the love of Braja. And the destinations differ according to the quality of one's actions. Liberation, apavarga, through bhakti, is then achieved. So now I'm going to read a confirming verse. This is Canto 5, Chapter 19. This is that prayers by the residents of Jambudvip. That's the title of the chapter. So what's Jambudvip? What's Jambudvip? In the... We're good? Okay. Jambudvip is Bhumandala. Well, actually, Jambudvip is the middle island of seven islands. And then other things, the ocean surrounding the seven islands and so forth. So Jambudvip is the central island, on top of which there's Mount Sumeru, and there's nine varshas, and one of those varshas is Bhardvarsha. So this section is from the Bhardvarsha section of Jambudvip. And so it's not a prayer yet. It's Shukadeva Goswami describing what happens at Bhardvarsha. So he's quoting a verse, which is text 20 from the chapter. But, I'll read what it says, because that's the sequence. That liberation, whose essential nature is unmotivated bhakti yoga to the Lord full of qualities, the Lord who attracts the minds of all beings, who is not the object of merging, who is not described by material words, who remains beyond destruction of the universe, who is the most exalted Atma, who is the son of Vasudeva, takes place by destruction of the knot of ignorance which causes various material goals when there is association with devotees of the Lord. Now that translation is very different than Prabhupada's, but it's Jiva Goswami-esque. It's part of his lawyering. He's making a point. The previous verse, which is text 19, is saying there's Bhardvarsha and there's different grades of living entities on Bharatvarsha, on this earth planet. Lower, higher, and in between, by birth and by consciousness and by quality and guna and karma and so forth. Standard from Bhagavad Gita for the different types of people. And of those different types of people, the verse says, some engage in worship of Vishnu. They follow Varnashram. Some don't. Some do. Then comes this verse. So here's the BBT translation of text 20. After many, many births, this is Prabhupada, when the results of one's pious activities mature, one gets an opportunity to associate with pure devotees. Then one is able to cut the knot of bondage to ignorance, which bind him because of varied fruitive activities. As a result of associating with devotees, one gradually renders service to Lord Vasudeva, who is transcendental, free from attachment to the material world, beyond the mind and words, and independent of everything else. That bhakti yoga, devotional service to Lord Vasudeva, is the real path of liberation. So it's an important verse. And where it fits into this, the flow of this discussion is, there's impersonal sayuja, and there's other forms of liberation that are Vaishnava liberations, and then there's this samipya liberation, and then there's the opportunity to become a resident of Vrindavan. And there's great gradations of realization based upon one's activities and one's consciousness and association and so forth. But the best of all, in Bharatvarsha, that's where we are, is getting the association of pure devotees and hearing these topics, which are in themselves very sweet, which is what we're doing, and gradually becoming cleansed of this ignorance that's the knot that holds us lifetime after lifetime after lifetime after lifetime after lifetime after lifetime to fruitive activities, the bondage of birth and death. It's described in Canto 1, Chapter 2, Chindanti Kovidas Tasya, that this sword cuts the knot of the internet, that's the language that Prabhupada uses, is the bondage to fruitive activities. What's the bondage to fruitive activities caused by? Well, it's we want to enjoy, but there's nothing wrong with wanting to enjoy. It's enjoy separately from Krishna. That's ignorance. And to have that, we get a material body and we get covered by illusion and we're in la-la land thinking, hey, are we having fun yet? And make bumper stickers. Are we having fun yet? And do it again and again and again. Like, you know, it's the bondage. The root cause of suffering is ignorance. And the remedy is cut ignorance. You can try to cut ignorance just by knowledge because it would make sense. Hey, that's the solution, get knowledge. And then you overcome ignorance. But knowledge can't overcome ignorance. The rebelliousness towards Krishna isn't cut by knowledge. It takes more than that. It takes bhakti. That's the healthy position. Knowledge alone is not enough. Knowledge is good. Knowledge is good. It's not enough. It's insufficient. But with bhakti, then knowledge is a companion. It's a subset. But it's not just knowledge. It's bhakti fortified with knowledge. So you know what's what. Instead of thinking what's what is not what's what, and the other get it the other way around, covered by illusion. So just stepping back from all this very intricate conversation, hearing the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan, or the subject matter of the Bhagavatam describing Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, is most exalted, it's most merciful. All the other nine cantos help prepare us to enter with proper orientation and mindset and condition of heart to understand the tenth canto. Otherwise, it's like, you know, mythology or Harry Potter or something. You know, something that's just not to be taken very seriously. You know, interesting, but not, you know, the real mission of human life is to become immersed in the topics of Krishna. Although that's what Bhagavad Gita says. So how to get there? So the Srimad Bhagavatam is providing that. And Jiva Goswami is holding our hand and helping us take a look at the subject. Continuing. The performance of duties offered to the Lord, yatha varna vidhanam, gradually becomes liberation. So that was text 19 and 20. Now here comes the next verse, defines that liberation or apavarga. It is pure bhakti to the Lord, free of material attraction, anatmiye. He, Krishna, performs actions for the happiness of devotees, not for his own happiness alone. By his nature, he is beyond the gunas. This is also the Atmarama person, or the one that's connected to Krishna. He is beyond the gunas in words, anirukte. He is without disappearance, anila yane, always being manifest. The swarup, that's the characteristic or the lakshana of bhakti, is that it is devoid of upadis, like liberation. The reason for the word apavarga is described. It takes place by destruction of the knot of ignorance, which is the cause of various material goals. So if you don't have material goals, what do you have left? You have spiritual ones. But spiritual ones don't mean trash the world. It means this is Krishna's world. So we engage Krishna's energy in service to Krishna. We don't trash it. We don't artificially discard it. We recognize it as Krishna's and engage it in Krishna's service. That's the complete form of renunciation. But when we don't have that, we have ignorance. And then so with ignorance, we don't see Krishna, we don't see who we are. We see matter, and then we have material goals and struggle unnecessarily. The derivation of apavarga is, quote, that method by which one quits the material world, unquote. And he cites Padma Purana. Vishnor anu charatvam, he moksham ahur manishanaha. The wise say that liberation is serving Vishnu. And then another reference, Skanda Purana. O Lord, liberation means fixed bhakti to you, since the devotees of Vishnu are liberated. And this is Krishna's words to Rukmini with the same intention. He says to Rukmini, whatever qualities you hope for in order to become free from material desires are eternally present in you, O angry woman, for you are my unalloyed devotee. And, O supreme reservoir of love, speaking to Rukmini. Unfortunate persons are those who, even after obtaining me, the Lord of both liberation and material riches, hanker only for material treasures. And then going back to Canto 2, I hope you are enjoying his lawyering, making his case. Here's a Canto 2, Chapter 3. It's Sukadev speaking. It's called Pure Devotional Service, Change of Heart. That's the title of the chapter. The verse 12 reads, if jnana, the path approved for attaining the Lord, which creates indifference to the multitude of material gunas, arises, and is followed by satisfaction of the self, which creates complete detachment from the gunas, then Kaivalya is the approved path, bhakti yoga. Experiencing bliss in bhakti, how can that person not have attraction for topics of the Lord? That's Jiva Goswami's words. Here's Prabhupada's BBT. Transcendental knowledge in relation with the Supreme Lord Hari is knowledge resulting in the complete suspension of the waves and whirlpools of the material modes. Such knowledge is self-satisfying due to its being free from material attachment, and being transcendental, it is approved by authorities who could fail to be attracted. And then the last. The commentary says, quote, Kaivalya, the approved method is bhakti yoga. So then he clarifies, the approved method means the method to attain the Lord. This happens when there is association of devotees. Sukadev speaks the verse. Now, many of these evenings, it's just pastimes. And it's really sweet. And there isn't all this chew on these difficult passages. And pastimes are easy to listen to, and we may not kind of, you know, enjoy them, but not really understand the fullness of what's being provided within those pastimes. So I didn't choose to come to your home and speak on something that's all this elevated philosophy. It just came up in the sequence of this research. But what's Jiva Goswami doing? The essence of what Jiva Goswami is doing is giving the support to what Lord Chaitanya's teaching is. And Lord Chaitanya's teaching is the best of all the devotees are the residents of Vrindavan. And amongst the residents of Vrindavan, the best of all the devotees are the gopis. And the nature of the gopis is the degree of selflessness of their love, and the sweetness of their love, and the reciprocation that Krishna gives to them. But of course, the focus, because this is chapter 12, this is on the cowherd boys, but as it applies to the cowherd boys, it applies to all the residents of Vrindavan. So what's the philosophical basis for that exalted position given to the residents of Vrindavan, cowherd boys, whoever? What's the philosophical basis? So he's establishing it. Now, specifically, my understanding of the Sandarbhas, well, I'll say a few things. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was asked about commentary on Vedanta Sutra, he said there's no need for commentary on Vedanta Sutra because the author of Vedanta Sutra has already provided commentary on Vedanta Sutra. And that's Srimad Bhagavatam's commentary on Vedanta Sutra. So not to contradict Lord Chaitanya, to say there's no need for commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Jiva Goswami is given a commentary on Vedanta Sutra by the Sandarbhas. Now, the history of the Sandarbhas, as far as I understand it, is from his childhood, Gopal Bhatta, the son of the chief priest of Sri Rangam, Venkata Bhatta, he was very scholarly by his disposition, and he loved the Bhagavatam, and he didn't have a computer, but he kept very assiduous notes, detailed notes on the topics. Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana, and then these different categories, and he took assiduous notes. And when he reached Vrindavan, Gopal Bhatta gave his work to Jiva Goswami. It said, please put it in order and publish it. Because he, Gopal Bhatta, had heard from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu every day, every evening for 4 months. Imagine what that was like. And he's, you know, super scholar, and so he loved the Bhagavatam and took notes for, with all the references that he could get his hands on from the Sri Vaishnava tradition, but knowing in connection with that what Lord Chaitanya's emphasis and teachings were. So very profoundly scripturally grounded with Lord Chaitanya's teachings, and gave it to Jiva Goswami. So Gopal Bhatta gave him a condition. Just don't mention my name. Because that's how he liked to serve from invisibly. Serve the Vaishnavas. So in the beginning of the Sandarbhas, the first of the Sandarbhas, the Mangalacharana, he just says, one Bhatta means a learned person. He doesn't use his name, Gopal Bhatta. But one learned person gave me this work to do. So it's Gopal Bhatta's research, and then Jiva Goswami's brilliance to take it and put it in the fashion that it is today, or that he presented. And it's essentially, it's a commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Essentially. So without going into it further. Because Vedanta Sutra is commentary, natural commentary of Srimad Bhagavatam. What he does, the structure is, he makes a statement, and then he supports the statement with Srimad Bhagavatam, which is like, here's the sutra, and here's the commentary on the sutra. Clever, huh? And then other Srimad Bhagavatam references, and other references from other scriptures, and he says at the beginning, these are the references that I'm going to call upon, and sometimes commentary by Sridhar Swami, because Lord Chaitanya approved the commentary of Sridhar Swami, and some writings from other notable persons. So, he's taking the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, and the audience that he's writing for is not, you know, people living in the suburbs of Detroit in the year 2020. He's writing for scholars of his time. That's his audience. Now, scholars of his time can be little people like us that don't have such scholarship like the scholars of his time. But we can take the essences, and it's very powerful, and it's teaching us, what does Srimad Bhagavatam say? What does Vedanta Sutra say? And how does the Srimad Bhagavatam explain it? And specifically, with Krishna Sandarbha and Preeti Sandarbha, two very important portions of the Sandarbhas, how does this special position of the residents of Vrindavan, you know, it's just the cowherd boys are going out and they're playing. That's the verses. And then how fortunate they are, Kritapunya Punja. So, okay, let's take a closer look at that. And he's building a case for why it is that they're so fortunate. Why Shukadeva Goswami speaks that way. Why Lord Chaitanya speaks that way. Why the followers of Lord Chaitanya speak that way. Here's the reasons. When the word Kaivalya is used, what does it mean? There's the emperors have kind of taken it as their brand, but that's not really what it means. And Apavarga, well, some people use the word Apavarga in so many different ways. Here's really what it means. And then as he goes along, because this is the section we're reading, or the later, he refers back to, I made this argument way back there. You can go look it up. He doesn't say it again. It's already thoroughly presented somewhere else. He's building his case. The case goes like this. It's really nice. I heard this from Krishna. My mind went blank. The devotee that did his PhD on Paramatmasundarbha at the university, at Oxford University. Help me with the name. What's his name? Huh? Yeah. Radhika Raman. So I heard this from Radhika Raman. It's really cool. Any eminent writer wants to establish that the line that he's received knowledge from is the best. You know, they toot the horn. This is the best. So the strategy of Jiva Goswami is 1, 2, 3. Srimad Bhagavatam is the topmost pramana that he does in the Pramana Khanda section of Tattvasandarbha. 2. The teachings of Lord Chaitanya are the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam. He said that's where the greatest amount of work had to go. And then the conclusion is the teachings of Lord Chaitanya are the greatest or the highest. That was his strategy. And they were doing multiple other things at the same time, but commenting on Vedanta Sutra without violating Lord Chaitanya's statement, there's no need. So he didn't. But he did it. Brilliantly. I'm a Jiva Goswami fan. So, you know, it's a little difficult for me to go through all this too, and, you know, to sit in a setting like this and go through all this. It's my apologies. But I appreciate the rigor, and that he doesn't have a devotee audience. He has a scholarly audience. You have to be really careful with scholarly people. And he makes strong assertions. You know, he's telling them, I'm sorry, but Kaivalya doesn't mean Kevala Bhakti or Kevala Advaita. It's not monism. And then has their reasons on the authority of the Bhagavatam to say it. And this Kritapunya Punja verse is a very strong. Those who are jnanis, who realize the bliss of the impersonal feature, he who is the object for them, and the others and the others, here's the cowherd boys, and they're just playing with him. The Brahmavadis can't play with the Supreme Lord. They're not eligible. Okay, so let's see if there's some discussion. Now, I meant to say, we were kind of getting settled, will invite our host and hostess family to share something first or question something first if you like, or you can pass and wait. And there's some people online, so we'll do a little in the room and then go online.
Thank you so much, Maharaj, for such a nice lecture and making us convinced that the Supreme People are the presidents of Vrindavan. Without any doubt, unconditionally, the case is rested. So, Prabhu, Maharaj, my question is, so within the residents of Vrindavan, you see, and you also mentioned that gopis are
most exalted.
The most exalted, and also you mentioned about manjaris there. And I was also seeing the little Brahmar going on. So that the prakat, the aprakat pastimes and prakat pastimes.
Yes.
So the pastimes in Golok Vrindavan are the aprakat pastime, which means that the Maharas is aprakat as well as prakat. Is that correct?
Could you take your mask off? Because some words are not coming through clearly.
So the
let's do the prakat aprakat part again.
Yeah. So Maharaj, the Maharas, is that
Maharas?
Yes, Maharaj. So is that prakat as well as aprakat?
Yes.
And then second question, Maharaj, I have for the sake of clarity is, I heard somewhere that manjaris are they don't participate in Maharas, but they are. They make arrangements. Is that correct understanding, Prabhu? If we can, Maharaj, if we can show
this
some
This is Rasalila specific.
Yes, Maharaj.
Yes.
So is the difference between the gopis
assistants.
And manjaris?
Yes. They're assistants too. And the gopis are the participants in. Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. Thank you, Maharaj. I just wanted to get a better clarity on this.
And they're happy. They're not like, oh, I want to get an upgrade.
Yeah, that's right. I was hearing. I was literally.
They're happy.
Yeah.
They're more than happy.
Yeah. So I was also thinking about there was a little bee that was going around here in this virtual pastime of Vrindavan that you created here. So there is a Brahmar Geet that is for the bee mentioned. Is that also a aprakat pastime or a prakat pastime, Prabhu Maharaj?
Radharani's talks with the bumblebee?
Yes, Maharaj.
That's what you're referring to?
Yes, Maharaj.
Well, I'm not sure because according to what Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes and what Bhaktisiddhanta writes, the pastime of Krishna leaving Vrindavan is a prakat pastime. Krishna doesn't leave Vrindavan in Krishna Loka. But there's the bhava. So now, does Radharani have a pastime in Krishna Loka or the aprakat pastimes where she's feeling such intense separation from Krishna that someone as a messenger comes and she starts talking like a madwoman? So, quite possibly there's some aprakat pastime or Krishna Loka pastime, but it's not exactly the same, but the same bhava is there, undoubtedly, since her mood of madness, mahabhav. And then going the other direction, oh no, please don't go. I know who is Krishna, but I can't help myself. So that's love and madness is a Radharani special.
So does that mean, Maharaj, that the leela of separation is
there
in there
both places?
In both places. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Maharaj. Thank you so much.
And then the detail may be different, but it's there in full.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Thank you. Maharaj, you were describing Jiva Goswami's Shad Sandharva as a commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Now, I have heard another connection that for Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya's authenticity, right, it was challenged that what is the commentary?
Yes.
What is the commentary you have on Vedanta Sutra?
Baladev.
And Baladev Vidyabhushan wrote Govinda Bhashya.
That was formal, yes.
Right. So Govinda Bhashya is considered as the formal
yes.
commentary as the basis of
sutra by sutra.
Okay. But by at that time that Jiva Goswami's Shad Sandharva were not considered as a commentary.
Because it wasn't done in that way. I'm saying based on what I heard from Radhika Raman. Okay. It was not meant as explicitly a commentary. You know, so it wasn't accepted because that's not what it was. There's a form for commentary. Here's the sutra, here's the commentary. That's not what he did.
So it's not as a sutra by sutra formal.
It's not specifically like that, no. The form is like, you know, Sandarbha, the term Sandarbha is a type of literature that follows certain rules, A, B, C, D. And so that's what Sandarbha, it follows those rules. Okay. And commentary in Vedanta Sutra follows another set of rules. Mm. And, you know, for scholarly people, rules are really important. So the principle, this is what I understood from Radhika Raman. In principle, the format was Jiva Goswami states the format right in the middle of Tattva Sandarbha. I'm going to make statements. To support the statements, here's the pramana. So now the statements, what I understood, I may not have correctly understood, what I understood from Radhika Raman is the statements are more or less along the lines of the statements of Vedanta Sutra, or essences, because I don't know how many and everything, but, you know, it covers the essence of what Vedanta Sutra expresses in sutra form in his, you know, he makes a statement. So it's not a one-to-one.
Is Baladev Vidyabhushan's Govind Bhashyam available somewhere as a
yes.
reference text, as a PDF yeah. or?
Yes, yes. I'm not sure. Most likely Bhandu Swami has translated it. But it is available in English. I don't know who the translator is, you know, right off the top. I'd have to look it up.
Okay. Anybody else has a question?
Maharaj, as you said, like, we should not be, like, to read Krishna's pastime, we should go through all the ninth canto first, all the nine cantos, and then it should be like we should be reading the tenth canto. But I was wondering, like, then why do we have this, when we're distributing books, why do we distribute the Krishna books also in that?
Well, Prabhupada had us do that. I mean, it was during his time. It's not just... So, one of the explanations that's really easy to understand is, well, Prabhupada gave us all these cautions about not going to the 10th canto before going through the first nine cantos over and over and over, and he gave his reasons why. He didn't know if he was going to be able to complete commentary on 10th canto. And so he did a timeout and he did a summary study of. in language that even the public audience could not get, not misunderstand, you know, certain sections of the 10th canto and get the wrong idea. It's particularly the Rasa Lila portion, but other portions also, where, you know, it may be taken as mythology and so on. So he sugarcoated it or made it palatable for a non-devotee audience, the general public, to read and digest properly. He wanted to have that just in case he wouldn't be able to complete, which is what happened. Okay?
Thank you, Maharaj. Another question is like, is the Dvesha and then supremacy is interrelated to be, to have this tendency of supremacy?
I didn't catch it. Try again.
Tendency of enviousness and then tendency of supremacy.
Could you turn that speaker towards me because I'm having a hard time hearing?
Feeling envy from others and the tendency to feel ourselves as superior from others or supreme from others. Is that interrelated?
So there's two different emotions. One is an envy emotion.
Yes.
And the other is a superiority emotion. So you want to know where does that come from or how to deal with it? Or what?
Yes, how to deal with it too. It's like my question as well. Somebody also asked.
Or how do we help ourselves or how do we help somebody else? That's dealing with that, either one of those two emotions.
Right.
Well, in answering a question like that, I always, my thought goes to it depends. It depends on the person and your relationship with the person and, you know, what their capacity to hear and where they are on their spiritual trajectory, how do you help another person that's struggling with that? So having said that, there's a 3-part seminar that was conducted just for devotee audience and non-devotee audiences on the art of meditation, overcoming negative emotion. Because those are two and there's others that are negative emotions. And so there's tips and methodologies of how to deal with those negative emotions. But you know, it very much depends on the hurt person you're interacting with. And you know, How much faith do they have in sadhana bhakti? Because ultimately, this is like, you know, go way up there. Ultimately, bhakti has the power to dissolve all of that. Chapter 25 of Canto 3, Kapiladev says, bhakti has the power to dissolve the subtle body. Or, so another is bhakti has the power to bring, awaken knowledge and detachment because it's attachment that gives rise to these others. Or it's being covered by ignorance that gives rise to these others. So, but it's not just cultivation of knowledge, it's cultivation of bhakti. It gives rise to knowledge and detachment. So there's different methodologies of detaching oneself. You can do it with a public audience in 5-10 minutes. But, you know, staying there is another thing. You know, an exercise. I'll just describe the exercise. But, you know, it doesn't stick without awakening of bhakti. So the exercise goes like this. There's two exercises. close your eyes, take five deep breaths, inhale, exhale. So you get them into a really, like, you know, meditative space. And then reflect internally what image appears in your mind. You know, just subjective. Maybe it's your child. Maybe it's a struggle in the workplace. Maybe it's a relationship. Maybe it's someone that you have much affection for. Maybe it's so many maybes. So what's that image? And then the image that's in your mind, and then you're the observer of that image that's in your mind. And there's feelings connected with that image that's in your mind, and those, you're the observer of those feelings, of the image that's in your mind. And now, go inside and feel the presence of the soul as the observer, and stay there. Three deep breaths, you know, so, now what's the application? When you're having some negative emotion, whatever it may be, it's the mind. And that which you're having the emotion about is not you. The emotion itself is not you. You're the observer of that emotion. Now who are you? And if once you're in that position of detachment, you're much better position to have intelligence how to deal with the situation and the emotion connected with the situation. When you get lost in the emotion, you get carried away. You forget who you really are. And you're helpless. You're just being carried by the waves of material energy. So if you cultivate not, you know, you okay? Okay. Anyway, there's other exercises, but just go back to Kapila Dev. Devahuti asks a similar question to your question. It's the beginning of chapter 25. You can read it. And he gives a really nice answer. His answer is, of course, it's bhakti. But how to cultivate bhakti? It's through sadhu-sangha. Then there's a whole section of who's a sadhu and how do you interact with a sadhu? What's the result of interacting with a sadhu? You know, it's bhajana kriya. But there's the short term, there's the long term, and then there's ultimate. So the answer I would give to somebody a lot depends upon where they are in their spiritual trajectory and what their capacity is to receive. You know, take 10 deep breaths.
Yes, Maharaj, so far I have learned whatever I am trying to apply that, but still, like, mind gets so agitated at that time. It's like sometimes the emotion is so painful. It's like you are lost in that feelings, and then slowly you come out of it. That's why I was asking, what is that, like, quick exercise that can be done at that time?
Well, a quick exercise is 10 deep breaths, but okay. Bhakti is the longer term. You know, knowledge, you know, what is it? And it's the mode of nature. It's not me. Well, who am I? You know, when you start asking those kinds of questions, you can be disconnected from being carried away by the mode of nature and the mind. Here's some nice verses. It's next time you go through this, if it's you or somebody, Canto 5, Chapter 6, verses 5 through 8, something like that. It's a really heavy warning about don't trust the mind. You know, the verses, it's Rishabhdev to his sons, and, you know, Prabhupada's purports. It's kind of like, you know, okay, splash cold water in your face when you get into the following the mind. There was somebody that had this, like, repeated thing without one of those negative emotions things. I said, try this. every day for 1 month, take those verses, read one verse, read it carefully, slowly, and close the book and meditate on the application of that verse in your life. Do that every day for a month and tell me what happens at the end of the month. And they went, phew. But then knowledge is not enough, because the modes are still going to act. It's just reduced, but it's still going to act. That's what Kunti, that's what Devahuti says in the beginning of chapter 25. I mean, just paraphrasing. I get the philosophy. Kapila Dev, I know I'm not the body and all that stuff, but I get carried away. So what do I do? I mean, read the chapter. So scripture gives us, it's medicine. And it can help cure the material disease. Spiritual medicine to cure the material disease. And it works. It's medicine that works. Just read the label, follow the prescription, and try to apply it. And, you know, not just the reading, but then also the application of what you're reading. And it's very powerful, powerful medicine. That's where my faith goes. It goes to Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay. So we got some online questions to bring over here. And we're going to ask our hostess if she wants to say something later. You don't have to. But... yeah.
This is from Sanchari Devidasi. Our lives tend to go up and down due to various external and internal influences which cause our surrender to rise and fall like waves in an ocean. Yet we still keep trying because the other alternative becomes distasteful simply by starting devotional service. Do all the little moments in our devotional life where we surrender count? Or is it because we aren't perfected yet? It's false surrender preparing us for the full. Can full surrender occur before the time of death? What does that really look like?
Well, she made a very nice depiction of unsteady bhakti, anishtita bhakti. And it has, there's six stages of unsteady bhakti. And so, she's not in, out of line. She's standard practicer of unsteady bhakti. And is it possible to come to steady bhakti? Yes. And the method of coming to unsteady bhakti is to overcome the unwanted things within the heart, or anarta nivritti. And how long does that take? It takes as long as it takes. That's how long it takes. And a lot depends upon the intensity of our desire to get on the other side, not just of the suffering, but the impurity that causes the suffering. Nobody likes suffering. So we pay attention when we're suffering, we become a little lax when we're not suffering. So then in comes some more suffering. But so the real, we heard it just in this session this evening, that real liberation is not just cessation of. Real liberation is connection to the personality of Godhead. So, make that your focus, your goal, your objective, and continue to strive, and you'll get there. And if it happens in this lifetime or multiple lifetimes, so be it. But don't become slack in your efforts, and then you'll get there. But is it possible in this one lifetime? For sure.
The next question is from Pooja Shobha Chopra Mataji. She says, Hare Krishna, Guruji, is there a way to connect to the liberated soul? how do we recognize if we ever get to meet them again in their new birth?
I don't know how you get to recognize if you met. Oh, I know, recognize you. You're Bhaktisiddhanta. Oh, I recognize you. You're Jiva Goswami. So I think you have to go to where they are, not they come to where you are.
Next question is from Giri Watakota Prabhu. It says, the question is, Lord is very kind and merciful. As a sadhaka, we always try to please Lord. Is Lord's mercy is different from when He is pleased? How do you know if He is pleased?
Guru Sadhu Shastra. And there's a subjective experience of contentment or happiness. Like the example in the Bhagavatam is after fasting for some time and you break the fast and you strength restores to the body and hunger subsides and you feel satisfied. So you can tell subjectively from the eating process after fasting, similarly for the bhakti process. The detachment from so many other things is one of the symptoms. Viraktir anyatra cha. Other things become, they fade. And what's important to you or a priority for you. It's not like you trash them, but just doesn't become so important. Your priorities change. Specifically that there's three symptoms. Wanting to be in service to Krishna, some feelings of attraction for Krishna, and detachment from other things. That's it? Okay. You have something further. I want your good wife to come back and sit on the hot seat for a minute.
No.
It's in your
hand. Okay. So my question is related. We were hearing about liberation, right? There is a one type of liberation called as Sayujya Mukti, where people think merging with the Supreme, becoming one with the Lord. And Prabhupada writes, devotee of Krishna does not want any type of liberation, but right. To even speak of Sayujya Mukti. So not even any other type of liberation also. And we hear that very famous quotation, Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kami Sakle Ashant, Krishna Bhakta Nishkama Tayava Shant. So the devotee of Krishna does not want any sort of liberation. But then in our reading, in our preaching, most of the time we use that phrase that the goal of life is to go back home, back to Godhead, that we want to go back to Krishna in the spiritual world, in the Goloka Dham. So that is our goal of life. So in one sense, the desire is there.
Good.
And that is our selling point also in preaching, that see, there is so much suffering and the goal of life is you should go back to Krishna.
Good.
So that desire is still there. Good. So one type of desire. So how do we
navigate?
Right. How we kind of understand that point, that the devotee.
Okay. Really simple. Prabhupada, I remember reading a Back to Godhead article. It was right at the very beginning of the lecture. Prabhupada was saying, in the beginning, it's good to want to be with Krishna. I want to go to Krishna. And when one becomes matured in devotion, you're always with Krishna. So, Krishna, you can do with me whatever you like. I just want to be engaged in service to you, wherever you like me to be engaged in service to you. It doesn't mean that there's something very special, irreplaceable, That's what we just read this little, you know, samipya, being in direct contact with the personality of Godhead is the best of the liberations for the devotee. Because it is very special to be, let's just say, for those of you in the room that never met Prabhupada, it's one thing to hear a recording or see a video, it's another thing to be in his association. So there's something special about personal association. Or Gopakumar, he was able to see, but it wasn't the same as being with Madan Gopal. He wanted to be with Madan Gopal. And he had enough spiritual acumen to understand, well, it's not the same. So there's something very special about being in Krishna's association. But it's not a matter of making a demand upon him. It's a eagerness to be in his association, loving service association. It's very special. You know, the gopis or the residents of Vrindavan, they knew he was just over there in Mathura, but he wasn't in Vrindavan. Or when there's this passage that says when the cowherd boys would be going through the forest, and in between this cowherd boy and Krishna was a tree, and for those short moments that they were separated from one another, it seemed like 10 years or more. Oh, there's Krishna again. So seeing Krishna is something special. Attachment like that, it's transcendental attachment that's different than our material idea of, let me out of here. I want to be with Krishna means I want to be out of here. That kind. Anything you'd like to share?
First of all, thank you very much for blessing our house and us. And my question is, like, this week, like in India, or for all Hindus and for all Vaishnavas, we had a special event of Ram Janmabhoomi Puja. Like in Ayodhya Dham, they are building the Ram Temple. So how, like in coming years, or like how ISKCON is involved in this celebration?
In the celebration?
Yes.
I could find out. I don't know. But I can inquire. And I know who to inquire from. I know a couple people who to inquire from. I don't know.
Okay. I guess to add to that question, part is how do we see as the role of ISKCON in that sort of activity which is happening at a world level? It's not any one particular organization. It relates to all the organization who are following Sanatana Dharma. So how we see the role of ISKCON in that sort of activity?
Are you referring to the confrontational portion or just the glorification portion?
Both.
My understanding is not what, if you were asked this question of different persons, you were likely to get a different answer. But I'm giving you my perspective. You catch more bees with honey than with vinegar. What we want is glorification of Ram. And so we followers of ISKCON, we want glorification of Ram. And we want to do that without, you know, bloodshed and acrimony and so how to do that, you know, it takes a good statesman to know how to do that. And the people that are going to do the bloodshed thing, there are plenty of those people, and they may make it difficult to do something that's done with devotion and sweetness because of the bloodshed people. because as soon as some headway is, anyway, I think it takes spiritual acumen and statesmanship to be able to do without bloodshed. But I, you know, at least I don't think that Prabhupada would want us to participate in that other method. Not that we're, not that Prabhupada was a pacifist, but, you know, we're not in the position to dharma yudha. Does that take care of your question? Okay.
So Maharaj, generally, the primary Vigraha on our ISKCON temples all over the world is Radha Krishna or
Jagannath.
And Gaur Nithai. And Gaur Nithai or Jagannath Maldev. There is a ISKCON temple in Ayodhya also.
Yeah.
I mean, I have not seen the temple, but
yeah.
There is. So there the prime Vigraha is...
Naturally.
Is that right, Prabhu?
Yeah.
Maharaj, okay. Yes. Yeah.
And in Bombay, not the main, but, you know, and in Potomac.
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
Delhi also, yeah. Yeah. No, I thought about Ayodhya, so. Yes. Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay. Okay. You have something. It's 25 after. Let's just do one, maybe two questions and we're done.
So, I was a little bit curious about Dhruvaloka.
Dhruvaloka.
Because my original understanding was that Dhruva Maharaj had meditated, and then Krishna had given, when Krishna gave him, when he asked for like the kingdom, it's like bigger than Brahma's.
Yes.
Krishna, my original understanding was that Krishna created Dhruvaloka.
No.
I learned afterwards that was not the case. And since, so all the planets like, revolve around, Dhruvaloka.
Not all the planets.
Oh.
The planets that we can see in the sky, and that there's planets that are beyond what we can see in the sky. So Swarga, Bhuvar and Swarga Lokas. So mainly a Swarga and Bhuvar Loka. What you see in the sky, that's moving around Dhruvaloka, not above.
I guess my question was, Dhruvaloka is like the planet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Yes, it is.
So it's also like a part of the spiritual sky, right? Or is
yes.
Okay, so then, like, what kind of devotees go to Dhruvaloka?
Dhruva-like people go there. Pure devotees. It's a curiosity question that I don't know any scripture that says these are the people that go there. But, you know, you have to be a card-carrying pure devotee to go there. Certified. Okay? Thank you. Would you like to ask something? Okay. No pressure. Invitation only. Prabhupada ki jai.